I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With Pete Metter, I'm Grant Paulson. Some call this parental guidance. 9 a.m. to noon again on this Sunday. Happy to be with you. Vic Ferreira, or the man they call Slick Vic on Nats broadcast. Touching all the right buttons. So today's sports schedule for you, if you want to watch some sports on TV. First couple things that jumped out at me, and if I'm forgetting anything, Pete, or if people have something that they want to watch, they plan on watching, soccer or something, you could tweet me at Grant H. Paulson. I'll add it to our What's on TV schedule here as we go. So you can hit me up again at Grant H. Paulson if I'm missing something. But the match is today at 3 Eastern on TNT. The match is the Champions for Charity event. This is Tiger Woods and Peyton Manning against Phil Mickelson and six-time Super Bowl champ Tom Brady. So I guess if you've had like a surgically repaired rods in your back, you know, bad neck situation, you're on one team, and you might writhe in pain every time you swing the club, Tiger and Peyton, against Mickelson and Brady. Of those duos, if you had to pick the one you're rooting for, you know I've always been a Peyton over Brady guy. I love Peyton. Tiger is a little bit harder to pull for and like for me. He was always kind of a pain in the butt to the media and borderline insufferable, and then he had his falling out. Some people love him. I don't know how much more I'm into Phil, though. I don't have a great file on Phil Mickelson. I know he kind of complains and whines a little bit, too. I guess I'll go Tiger and Peyton, the greatest golfer of all time, and in my mind, the greatest quarterback of all time. Give me those two guys. But Brady's a little, you would think he's a little better. He's certainly younger, fresher, more athletic, got a better back than Peyton. And Mickelson versus Tiger, who gets the upper hand there at this point in their careers?
It's a great question, Grant. All I know is the net worth of the four men involved is just staggering. I can't imagine what the side bets are going to be like between the four of them out there on the course. And hopefully, you know the match is presented in a way where we hear some of the trash talking and some of the side action that'll be going on between these guys. Because the one thing I love is all four guys are competitive as hell. We know they're going to be, chiding each other a little bit out there. And I hope some of their personality comes through. We know Peyton's got it. But, you know, those that watch golf know, Phil's a lot more friendlier, you know, so to speak, quote, on the surface than Tiger's ever been.
But don't you think Tiger can turn that on in a, you know, charity event?
I do,
today?
Yeah. No question. I certainly believe, I believe he's capable of it. And obviously Tom Brady is still an active player in the NFL who's had all eyes on him because now he's playing in Tampa. So we'll see if Peyton takes any shots at him or, you know, hey, just like me going to Denver, you know, you're going to Tampa. At least I went to Denver. I got a chance to win, and I did. But it'll be interesting to see if Peyton, what kind of shots Peyton takes at him, for being another star quarterback on the move, just like he was at the end of his career.
Yeah, Peyton's going to be great in this setting, and you imagine that the other guys will follow suit. So it could be good television. I've seen that it's already pouring in Florida, and there is a chance that it gets banged today.
Give it 10 minutes. It'll usually stop.
That's the hope. You certainly want it to be better by 3 o'clock, but I guess the forecast isn't great. So hopefully we get that in. I mean, it stinks when you wait for something. This has been planned for weeks and weeks. And I'm not a big golf guy. I'm going to check it out just out of curiosity. But for the golf people, I mean, this is their Super Bowl in a lot of ways. almost literally with the two Super Bowl quarterbacks involved. And you just don't want it to not come off and not happen. So hopefully you can get it in today, and they don't have to wait till tomorrow or another date. Elsewhere on the sports landscape today, the Coca-Cola 600, 6 p.m. on Fox. You know, UFC was the first event back. NASCAR followed suit. You know, it's interesting, Pete, because here we are on May 24th, and there's so little that has returned still that NASCAR is still really benefiting with people watching that traditionally wouldn't. UFC, the same thing. You know, I'll watch again next week, and I've watched a couple three-hour events at this point, every minute of them. And in the past, I would kind of check in for big fights. So the sports that have come back and kind of taken on that risk have probably benefited in terms of ratings. NASCAR had its highest-rated non-500 in several years. A week ago today, this will be the third race in 8 days, 6 p.m. on Fox for the Coca-Cola 600.
Yeah, the good news there, you know, at least in terms of that, they get an opportunity in prime time. But the bad news is, as is often the case, seemingly with NASCAR over the last couple of years, never seen anything like it, there are thunderstorms in the forecast all afternoon from 3 o'clock all the way to 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. So rain could become a factor down there at Charlotte as well coming up tonight. And if they had to move that race to tomorrow, that would give you a doubleheader with both the Cup and the Xfinity cars tomorrow as well. So hopefully somehow these thunderstorms miss, but the percentage of thunderstorms looks pretty good for down there at Charlotte. And we know they got the Titan air dryers, but man, if it's gonna rain all night, no way they'll get the track dried, and they'd probably have to try it tomorrow, except there's thunderstorms in the forecast down there tomorrow as well. When it rains, Grant, it pours.
Yeah, I mean, you can't seem to get this stuff going. And that was one issue with their consolidated schedule, where they're doubling up on Sunday and Wednesday, you know, with the races at the same venue. You told me they're actually qualifying today for that race still as well, which I don't quite understand, because so today they'll qualify, then take a break, go eat lunch, whatever, and come back and race. But if they wreck their cars, do they have a second car that they use in the race, or how does that
yes,
work?
Yes, that's what happens if you wreck your car. And even, you know, in the standard situation where they qualify the day before in most cases, you know, if you wreck your car, you go to the back of the pack. That's essentially what happens. If you have to use a car different from the one you qualified, you have to start at the back of the field. So it's not a big deal. The Xfinity series, the truck series, they consistently qualify the same day that they race. So it's not an unheard of practice in NASCAR. So, but you just got to keep your car clean and hit your marks, get around there for a couple of laps, get your qualifying speed, and then find your place in the field. But as we saw last week, I mean, you know, even at Darlington, Kyle Busch had to start at the back of the pack. He made his way up through the field. So it's not for the better drivers with the good horsepower. If you start at the back, it's not you know, some sort of racing death sentence. Those guys usually aggressively work their way up through the field. For the most part, it takes them a few more laps maybe than normal to do it. Got to have some patience so you don't wreck the car. But qualifying and then racing on the same day, not unheard of, that's for sure.
Well, that's good. You know, for me, and I've enjoyed watching these couple of races, I don't think that you've missed, particularly in racing, fans in any way. I think with golf, you miss it a little bit because there's that roar after every shot, and there's some fun sometimes with guys shouting things out after the shot. It's not like it's a non-existent factor for me, but it's not to the extent of what football in the NFL or basketball at the NBA level would be without a crowd. You know, mixed martial arts, similarly, have I missed the crowd? Absolutely, because there have been a couple of really outstanding fights where I think if there were several thousand people in the arena watching, it would be off the charts, and the excitement would be through the roof, and the broadcasters would be screaming, and it really would elevate, I think, the entertainment value and just how much you're enjoying what you're seeing. But there's been some bits come out of it from a fighting standpoint where you hear a little bit more of the talking from the fighters. You know, sometimes the trash talking between each other or what they're saying, you can loudly hear in a way that you couldn't before. Sometimes the thumping of the lesser ounce gloves on the head. I haven't hated it in any way, and I've, in fact, gotten something out of not having the crowd for the sports that came back, but I think that's probably why those sports were among the first to come back, because it's just not as big of a factor. I thought it was really weird watching Bundesliga soccer last weekend, and I know they played again yesterday with Dortmund winning 2-0. I saw a little bit of that. But that's still really strange to me, Pete. I haven't been able to really get past that because normally there's just a – there's a soundtrack, if you will, to soccer with the, you know, that noise with the game and the silent, like, echoey nature of the players barking. It just doesn't sound very good. That's the one that I would say has not translated for me, sans fans.
It's funny you say that. Joe Miller and I, we taped our It's College Football podcast for this week on Friday, and we were talking about that. Joe's one of the geniuses of soccer. I put him sincerely on that level. He's as good as talking about soccer as anybody does it at in the media level. And I told him, I said, you know, I said, from watching, you know, the first weekend of the Bundesliga, I just wanted to see a guy score a goal and see the celebration or lack thereof, because they can't jump on each other. The guy can't rip his jersey off to the crowd and everything like that. There is none of that. And I watched the guy score a goal, and he just kind of ran to the corner like they normally do, and he just kind of danced for a couple of seconds, and that was kind of it. And the one part of it, I love the chanting at soccer games. I wish in some ways it could make its way into some of the big four American sports, because I think it's a great way for the crowd to be involved in the game. What's interesting about the NASCAR portion of it is the drivers will tell you that once they're into the car and the helmet on, they got all the communications gear where they're talking to their crew chief and the spotter that's up on the roof and stuff like that, they see the crowd, you know, during caution laps and things of that nature, but that stuff is kind of blocked out because they're so razor focused. And so the crowd necessarily doesn't make as big a difference in terms of the adrenaline for a NASCAR driver as it would a fighter. Because we hear guys talk about that all the time. Crowd, they hear it, the adrenaline, it gives them a little bit of an extra push. You mentioned MMA. The first night Dana did the fights down in Jacksonville, I was watching one of the preliminary bouts and then reading some of the post-match coverage. I forget which fighter it was, but he said he heard the color commentator saying something, and during the course of the fight, he used what he heard the color commentator saying that he should do, and it kind of helped him as part of his fight. So,
wow.
And that's something that in a full crowd situation, you're probably not hearing the guys broadcasting at ringside like you are in an empty octagon as it was during MMA fights that we saw on TV.
I think about that a lot, though. I remember when I called some games in Bowie, Bay Sox games years ago for minorleaguebaseball.com. Some of those nights where I was calling those games, there's nobody really at those games. You know, when you get animated, I'm sure they can hear you down there, and you're sitting there talking about a guy 0 for his last 14 with 8 strikeouts, and he's really struggling. You know, some of those ballparks – at Bowie, the booth is actually a little further back from home plate than some, which are kind of right on top. But there's definitely ballparks where guys can hear the broadcasters, and it is a little bit uncomfortable. I just saw a story about Mike Singletary, the former NFL head coach, that I want to bring up next because it's pretty incredible. Also got to get into the Nats still in detail today. And speaking of racing, we've got a guest who's having success on the track at one of the highest levels, coming up at the bottom of the hour. He's Pete. I'm Grant. This is The Fan.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Parental guidance is what we call it. for now until we come up with something better next weekend. Pete Medhurst, Grant Paulson, 106.7 The Fan. Thanks so much for listening to the show. So I saw this on Twitter. It just kind of hopped across my feed, and I said, wait a second, that can't be right. But apparently it is. So Mike Singletary, the former head coach of the San Francisco 49ers, who was last seen professionally coaching in the Alliance of American Football, which went belly up before the XFL wasn't able to finish its first season because of COVID-19, went 2-6 in the AAF, apparently took a job as a high school football coach, kind of sandwiching that over the last two seasons before and after that Alliance run. And in his 22 games as a high school football coach, Mike Singletary, the former coach of the San Francisco 49ers, Pete, went 1-21 as a high school coach. And the story is that he is out. I don't know if he's being fired. They don't really do that in high school normally for bad performance, I don't think. Maybe he's just leaving, I don't know. But at 1-21 in two seasons, the story is that I'm seeing via Sporting News, former NFL coach Mike Singletary is out at his high school coaching job after that 1-21 record in 2 years.
He did not have winners, so therefore they did not win. Yeah, he stepped down technically from the head coaching job at Trinity Christian Academy Addison, according to the Dallas Morning News.
How does that happen? Do you take over such a bad program that you're not expected to win, you're going to turn them around because you're Mike Singletary, or is it actually a good football team that you just can't quite turn around? How does that happen?
Well, Grant, I mean, look, Texas high school football is incredibly tough. They did have success under their former coach, Steve Hayes, who's apparently coming back. We'll see. I mean, they struggled a little bit right before Singletary got hired. So, look, high school athletics, and this is where parents, lose their minds a little bit sometimes when coaches don't do well, especially at a public high school. You are at the mercy of who comes through your door. You can't control who lives in your neighborhood. High school sports are cyclical in some respects, where you have some kids in the neighborhood who aren't very good over a four-year period. Your record's not going to be very good. Now, if you're at a private school, like in this case, you can recruit a little bit, but there are plenty of other private schools in the greater Dallas area that are very good. So the competition for those players is huge. So, if you don't get some of those kids, you're just not going to be as competitive in one of the most competitive, if not the most competitive, high school football state in the country. So I can see where it can go bad. I mean, you can have all the football knowledge in the world, but if you don't have the Jimmys and Joes, it doesn't matter how good you are at X's and O's. It's very simple.
Yeah, Mike Singletary had one of the most epic rants ever. And you can't think of Singletary and his time with the 49ers without thinking about how he went off on his players after a disappointing loss. You can't coach with him. You can't win with him. You just can't do it. He was talking mostly about former Redskin Vernon Davis. This was Singletary.
No. You don't want me to go much further. Go right ahead. Ask the question. Vernon just, it was something that I told everybody at the very beginning of the week. I will not tolerate players that think it's about them when it's about the team. And we cannot make decisions that cost the team and then come off the sideline and it's nonchalant. No. You know what? This is how I believe, okay? I'm from the old school. I believe this. I would rather play with 10 people and just get penalized all the way until we got to do something else, rather than play with 11 when I know that right now that person is not sold out to be a part of this team. It is more about them than it is about the team. I cannot play with them. Cannot win with them. Cannot coach with them. Can't do it. I want winners. I want people that want to win.
Me too, Mike. Me too. So now we know why he went 1-21. He was only playing with 9 or 10 players probably who really wanted to win. And it was 9-on-11 for all of those snaps.
Probably sent little Tommy Jones home because he did something selfish at practice that wasn't within the team concept. And look, I mean, and this is easy to look at from the periphery. Mike Singletary, 61 years old, sometimes, and we talk about this all the time, happens in our industry as well, if you do not evolve as times and life and the game evolves, you are going to be left behind. I believe a lot of this is where Mike Singletary has not evolved. How do you think he would have, let's bring a Last Dance analogy into this. Phil Jackson, one of Phil Jackson's great geniuses was how he dealt with Dennis Rodman. How do you think Mike Singletary would deal with Dennis Rodman? He wouldn't have handled it the way Phil did. The first time Dennis took off for Las Vegas, Mike would have been telling the GM, we're going to cut him. He's not a winner. He's not with us. He's not here at practice. Phil had a way to massage that and was a genius in the way he handled Dennis Rodman because he was such a glue piece when it came to that team having success in the role that he played. Mike Singletary would not have handled that the same way, I guarantee you. For what we know of Vernon Davis here in this area and how he's played here and what he's done, I just don't see why Mike would have done this and gone off the way he did about Vernon Davis. But I think that's part of, you know, if you're coaching and you're managing any business, it doesn't matter whether it's radio, TV, football, baseball, whatever. If you're still dealing with things in a 1985 mentality when you were playing for Mike Ditka, you know, it's probably not going to go over well here in 2020. And I think that's part of probably what is some of the reason why Mike Singletary has had a bit of a struggle. Now, do you need more Jimmys and Joes? You got to have more of those to win. I believe Mike Singletary knows football, so to speak. But, you know, there's just way things you got to do business in 2020. And clearly, I'm not sure if Mike has evolved from that standpoint.
Yeah, he is a good lesson for a lot of people to learn, I think, going into coaching, to your point. Because, like, my nature in general is more of the Singletary style than the Phil Jackson style. In the sense that if I'm building a team, I don't necessarily want a Rodman. I don't want an Odell Beckham Jr. I don't want an Antonio Brown. Like, I want a bunch of Terry McLaurins. I want guys that operate in a way that is first class and above board and where they care about everyone around them. And, you know, they were raised in an environment where they understand that your actions matter and that you're an adult, you better act like a pro. You want to be a star, you better give me a star effort every single day. And so that's kind of how I operate. But as a head coach, to your point, it can't just be my way or the highway all the time. And I think he's a great example of that. But, man, 1-21 in high school is just incredible. And you talked about how tough it can be at the high school ranks in Texas. I'm watching. I just started last night. For years and years and years, I've had all kinds of friends and people tell me that the show Friday Night Lights is amazing and that I would love it. It came out when I was a senior in high school, and for whatever reason, I never watched it then. It went for about 5 years from like 06 to 11. I don't know. Did you watch Friday Night Lights? Not the movie, which was awesome, but the TV show that was directed by Peter Berg?
I don't watch a lot of TV that's non-sports related in terms of games, but I did peek in on that show from time to time, and I thought it was incredible. I thought it was very well done. The folks that, you know, live in the Texas area had, you know, some positive things to say about it, the way it was scripted, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it when I did get to see it, so I thought it was very well done.
Yeah, so I just watched the pilot episode last night, and it was nothing I didn't expect. I mean, it was great football, and the scenes were really well done in terms of the legitimacy to high school that I remember from, you know, the Friday night with the lights on. But the acting's excellent, and I don't know, I'm all in already. I haven't watched one episode, and I always knew when I watched it, I'd like it, but I hate starting shows where I'm a bunch of seasons and tons of episodes behind. I just have an adamant feeling that I don't do that. I just, it's too much. It's too overwhelming. But during this pandemic now, the last few nights I've been sitting in my house with nothing to watch, literally, and I'm sitting on the couch. And my wife's watching, like, Miss Maisel or whatever, and I'm just clicking around on my phone. I'm going, I got nothing better to do. I could mow through a bunch of episodes of Friday Night Lights. So started it last night and really, really like where we're at so far. So could be good, but that movie's, you know, Billy Bob, so great. And the book itself, I read the book, was fantastic. So it's not like I don't know what's coming, but I'm excited to see how they do the TV show because there's already a couple things that are a little bit different from the other projects. Let's do this next. We got a half hour here before the top of the hour to get into the Nats rebirth last year. It's May 24th, the anniversary of when the Nationals were at rock bottom at 19-31. How did they dig themselves out? We'll talk about it next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Pete and Grant, 106.7 The Fan. Pete, you said that Daniel Lust, who we had on the show last hour, about 60 minutes ago right now, just came out with another item that he says is a pretty big deal for the return of sports.
Yeah, U.S. Secretary of Homeland Security has now signed an order exempting foreign-born pro athletes and staff from being denied entry into this country. And that is 75% of the NHL and roughly 25% of Major League Baseball. So that allows those players now to come back freely without any hiccups or anything like that as we continue to get closer and closer to the month of June, where both of those leagues in particular want to get back to some sort of at least practice and then eventually get back into games, hopefully sometime in July. So that's a clear hurdle there for those guys to be able to do that fairly easily now without any hiccups getting back into the country.
So that was related to just the travel bans, correct?
Correct.
I mean, the
yes.
fact that you couldn't come and go because they don't want anyone who might have contracted COVID coming back into the country. So if you left and went home, which a lot of guys did, you couldn't get back to play anyway. And this makes that available to not only the NHL to get those guys back, but players in Major League Baseball from the Dominican and Mexico and Venezuela, you know, get all those guys back to spring training as well.
Yep, and obviously the NBA's also got a fairly decent amount of obviously foreign-born players now. Had they gone back overseas in some respects, those players will be able to come back as well now. But again, I mean, you mentioned it, you know, it's hard to believe it's, you know, going to be Memorial Day tomorrow, but that means we're right around the corner from June, and that's when a lot of these leagues have said we want to get, you know, back up and practicing at least in the month of June, so that at least clears the way for those players to do this without much fanfare.
Yeah, that's a huge step. All right, let's go back to a year ago. So it's May 24th, a Friday, and the Nationals are coming home to Nats Park to take on the Miami Marlins. They had just been swept in a four-game series by the Mets in four games that were all pretty close. In fact, three games in that series, they led in the eighth inning or later and had leads blown by that tumultuous bullpen. And the team was coming apart at the seams, and Rizzo's bullpen that he'd built was a disaster, and you know, Davies' buttons that he was touching weren't working, and they had dealt with a million injuries, and they had just had a series where their horses pitched, by the way, where they were, you know, going to their best starting pitchers. So after that series where they lost 5-3, 6-5, 6-1, 6-4 with a bunch of late-inning meltdowns to the Mets, they come back home on Friday, May 24th for game 51, and it was a four-game series with the Marlins, and the thinking was they've got to win three out of four to feel okay about themselves. If they split, that's not near good enough, and they have to win this first game at home. I remember Danny and I going to Nats Park thinking that Davey might get fired. We went over there just in case there was a press conference that he was being dismissed after our show at 2 o'clock on that Friday, May 24th, and I didn't even stay for the game. I had plans that night. I had to be at the house with the baby. My wife was going out. But I had to go over there just to make sure there wasn't some press conference to kind of talk to some players to see what the vibe in the organization was. In that game, I pulled up that date, that first game of the renaissance last year that culminated in a World Series championship. The Nats gave up two runs in the first inning. So they gave the ball that night to Kyle McGowan. He was the starter with kind of their season on the line. How funny is that to think about now? A guy who pitched really poorly and wasn't a factor in a whole lot of positive for them at all. But he was the guy. And I remember talking to Davey. He's like, listen, we're going to be fine. He's like, we just got to win tonight and everything will be okay. And I'm like, that sounds good. I said, but that's not really how this is going to work. And, oh, by the way, Kyle McGowan is pitching for you tonight. And he's like, yeah, we trust Kyle. I'm like, well, you shouldn't trust Kyle. Like, and my point is not to be a jerk, but you can't just keep acting like everybody's Scherzer and everything's going to be okay. You're using a pitcher who's not a big league starter. So he gives up two runs in the first and two runs in the second. They were down 4-1 in that game. They scored three runs in the third. They tie the game. Then they fall behind with four more runs in the fourth and the fifth. McGowan gets knocked out. You're now trusting the middle of your bullpen, which is awful. And so they fall behind 8-4 again. They should have lost that game against the Marlins. And had they have, who knows what happens. They ended up rallying with seven runs in the final few at-bats that they had and winning that game 12-10 on 14 hits. They overcame four errors. So it wasn't like they played a clean, great baseball game. But they won that game. They won three in a row, three out of four in the series, and they started to turn things around, Pete.
No doubt. Had they lost that game, Grant, that would have been their sixth consecutive loss, would have put them 13 games under 500. And, you know, again, as each day went by, had that continued to fester, you never know what moves may have been made. And as you brought up earlier in the show, that was when we started. We were seeing the, will the Nats trade Max Scherzer for a bundle? And will they make this move? And, we can sit back and look at it now and certainly chuckle about it. But within that game, Grant, it kind of epitomized what Davey had described about this team all year, though. A group that, you got to get 27 outs. And that was a team that did not give up until the 27th out was made against them. And the rally within that game in itself, it was kind of indicative of the mindset and the mantra that we saw from this team the rest of the way. And whether it was that individual game that, certainly sparked it, so to speak. It certainly kept it from being a six-game losing streak, and it kept you from going 13 games under 500 at one point. This was a team that, believe it, this team never was in first place at any point last year. At one point, they're 10.5 back. Even in September, they were 10.5 back at one point, trying to, find the promised land. But it was this kind of resiliency that would eventually be their calling card during the course of the season. And you're right. They had to bounce back from a game where they played poorly defensively. Kyle McGowan's not a guy that can overcome a defense playing poorly. He doesn't have that kind of stuff. And all of a sudden you found yourself trailing a terrible Marlins team, and it felt like more of the same was occurring for this club, but yet the resiliency that would become their calling card rose up in that game. And certainly at least got – that was kind of the small igniter that got the fire started for this team.
I remember talking to Davey that day just above the dugout during batting practice, May 24th, before the game when they were 19-31. And I said to him, I said, you know what you guys need? I said, you just need some runs in that first inning to breathe easy. He said, yeah, that'd be nice. I said, you need to jump out to like an 8-0 lead, and then you can just coast. And he looked at me, and he goes, 8-0? You think we could coast at 8-0? And he was kind of half kidding, but his point was, there's nothing that could happen tonight that could make my life easy right now. Like, everybody in this city hates me and wants me fired. And we got all those calls from all those people, and there he was at the end of the season on a tour bus going through Washington, D.C. as a World Series champion manager. The eighth inning of that game kind of swung their season, and it was fitting because the eighth inning had been their bugaboo all year up until then, where they'd given up so many runs and they'd blown so many leads. But it was a Juan Soto home run that gave them an 11-9 lead in that seesaw matchup, finally put them in front and gave them a chance to win. I remember where I was sitting. I remember how loud I screamed. I didn't think that was the beginning of a World Series turnaround, but I just thought it was so necessary and so needed, and it might have saved the manager's job. Because at that time, Randy Knorr was in town, and people were saying Randy Knorr was about to take over as the interim manager, but Juan Soto may have changed that with one swing.
Now the pitch. Swing and a drive hit well to left center field. It's deep. This one way back. This one is going, going, and gone. Goodbye. Bang, zoom goes Juan Soto into the brewhouse red seats with his eighth home run of the year. His third hit of the game. RBIs 31, 32, and 33. And how about those 15 hits now in his last 30 official at-bats? And he's given the Nationals the lead. It's Washington 11 and Miami 9. Unbelievable.
Between Soto and Rendon all year long, those two guys just came up with one massive swing, huge home run, big extra base hit to score somebody after another when needed it. But, yeah, I still haven't heard a good reason as to why Randy Knorr was in town, the manager of the AAA Fresno Ball Club, who plays all of its games in the Pacific Coast League out west. You know, maybe he was visiting a buddy or he had some endeavor or event. I don't know. But you can imagine the speculation when the guy that was the most likely interim manager is already kind of there, presumably ready to jump in if needed. But that night, Soto gets that win for the Nationals with that swing. They hang on. Wasn't just a one-man band. They were able to hang on and win that game. And as I said, the next night after the 12-10 victory, they get a 5-0 shutout. It was a day game where Patrick Corbin shut out the Marlins in 2 hours and 25 minutes. And then the Sunday, third game of that series, 9-6 win. Again, another offensive explosion. Fetty got the win, I think, in relief. They end up losing the final game of that series on Monday before heading to Atlanta. And if memory serves, Pete, that was when you called your first games, right? They had the Anibal Sanchez gem, and Strauss got a win on, you know, a huge game with a crazy 5-4 victory. Was that the first couple games you did last year?
Yes, sir. I was on the train with them, actually on the plane. But Strasburg was good in the Tuesday night game, and then obviously the explosion offensively in the 14-4 victory, and Anibal had the no-hitter going into the sixth inning. Of that contest on his return from the IL. Because remember, before that game in Atlanta, Sanchez had been awful early in the season. But obviously he wasn't 100%, as we would come to find out. But that time on the IL and him coming back at that point turned out to be critical. But also what was starting to develop a little bit ironic, Kyle MacGowan pitched the last three innings of that game, got a save, even though he gave up a big home run to Austin Riley. I think it was a three-run shot in the eighth or ninth inning of that game to make the score at 14-4. But, Grant, that was the kind of game you could see slowly now, with the pieces coming back in place, the offense was picking up its business. 9 runs in the Sunday game against the Marlins, 14 in that game against the Braves. And I still say, even though they won 3 out of 4 against the Marlins, I think it was these two games against the Braves, who, you know, obviously everybody's talking about the Braves. At that point, Nats were 9.5 games out of first place. But everybody was talking about how well the Braves were playing, and they were at that time. But to go into Atlanta and beat the Braves twice the way they did, especially the 14-4 game, I think in terms of the competition you were playing, they would then go to Cincinnati and win 2 of 3 there. And it really, you could see the offense starting to percolate because you got 14 against the Braves. You had 9 against the White Sox the following Tuesday at home, 6 more against the White Sox. And then you found yourself scoring 12 against the White Sox in Chicago the following week. You could start to see that offense, Grant, starting to show what it was more capable of. And that was able to overcome some of the pitching difficulties that were still being sorted out at that time. And I thought it was a big thing for this team to get itself going toward the 500 mark, and a feeling of, hey, we are who our manager keeps telling us we are, and got them going in the right direction. Because Davey kept telling them, as soon as we get all our people back, we're going to be fine. And the results started to dictate that And I think that, more than anything, helped keep that club adhesive in that time, and made their manager, who was certainly under fire, it made him out to be right and more believable to the players. So it's much easier to follow your manager and what he's saying when everything he's talking about starts to come to fruition the way it was.
Yeah, there's no doubt. 5-1 in that stretch from May 24th, when you count the Marlins four-game series and the back-to-back wins and a little two-game set with the Braves that kind of turned their whole season around. I think that the big part of it, too, was not just that what Davey was saying came to fruition, which helps, because I think those guys were veterans and they knew when they got those players back that it would happen. But all of a sudden you start to win and there's less gripping of the bat too tight. You know, there's less every mistake is the last mistake. You're not playing a game every single night that could lead to people getting fired and traded and jobs being lost. And you're not looking over your shoulder wondering, is Rizzo coming down to the clubhouse to call someone into an office to talk with them? You just play baseball now. And you could kind of see that that therapeutic nature of the release of the valve and everyone kind of taking a deep breath. And they just started having fun and playing ball. And the result was an epic run all the way to the playoffs and all the way to the World Series. We can get to the second half of that turnaround next. If you'd like to join us on this, the anniversary of the Renaissance, May 24th, when the Nats were 19-31 last year, you can call us at 800-636-1067. With Pete, I'm Grant. This is The Fan.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back to 106.7 The Fan's Sunday presentation of PG, Parental Guidance, with Pete Medhurst and Grant Paulson. We're talking about the Nats. It was 1 year ago today that they turned their season around, looking at some of the benchmarks of that renaissance. 800-636-1067 is the number. That's 800-636-1067 if you want to give us a shout, and we'll get to your calls as they come in. Let's go to Ash in Silver Spring on line two. Ash, looking back on the Nats turning their whole season around, what do you give credit to?
I think it was Parra.
Gerardo Parra.
Yeah.
The Baby Shark. Did you like his Baby Shark song when he came to the plate?
Yeah.
All right, cool. So you think Parra, what do you think? Just that he helped his teammates out and he got them in a better mood? He was good in the clubhouse? You think as a player, what do you think he did to help them out so much?
I think he got them in a better mood and got them more excited about the season.
I agree with you. Thank you for the call, Ash. Like, he definitely made a huge impact, Pete. You go back to the beginning of Parra's time here. So he started the year in San Francisco with the Giants. And it's kind of funny. April 29th and 30th with the Giants, he was playing in L.A. And he basically just could have stayed there because a couple days later, he finished, you know, May 1st with the Giants in L.A. It was his last game. His first game with the Nats was a week later on May 10th at L.A. with the Giants at Chavez Ravine. And on May 10th, that day, he went 0-for-3. He walked. It was his first game with the Nationals. They had a huge problem in their outfield. So he was going to get to play pretty often. And the next night, he was 0-for-3 and hit a grand slam in that contest to come all the way back to beat them. Now, that was May 11th, and they ended up sputtering for another couple of weeks after that. But that was kind of his welcome to D.C. moment. And maybe he needed that in the clubhouse to establish some credibility because he was such a – you know, a class clown kind of figure. He was so fun. You know, he was so, I think, just loosey-goosey and easygoing for his teammates. It might not have worked if they didn't see him perform at a high level first. And he had a couple of huge home runs right after coming to the Nats that may have helped.
We talk about it all the time. If someone's going to be a factor in your clubhouse, that person has to be there has to be some legitimacy to the player. I mean, and maybe it was a moment like that that did that. For Gerardo Parra with his new teammates here in D.C. And we saw him. I mean, he got really hot, Grant, as a pinch hitter and became a very effective left-handed bat for a while there for Davey Martinez off of the bench. But more importantly, if you're performing well, then you get a little more credibility, as you mentioned, inside the clubhouse. So especially with the leadership and the comfort he brought to some of the younger Latino players, in the locker room and in the clubhouse, I thought that was a very critical thing. It gave them kind of a mentor and a guy to look up to and things of that nature. And what we saw, and I said this last week when Brendan and I were talking about this, what I think Gerardo Parra did individually for Steven Strasburg within that clubhouse in getting him to loosen up a little bit, getting him to relax a little bit, what little bit I think Steven relaxes as a competitor, I think was huge in Steven's development last year as a player. And it will be interesting to see going forward without him in that clubhouse, you know, who kind of takes on that mantra now going forward. But again, when championship teams come together, there are so many things that and different role players and different personalities that all combine to make this thing work, and the Nationals were able to put that together. By the way, Ash reminds me of when I was the same age. I believe Ash was 10 when I used to call Ken Beatrice when he was doing his sports show locally here in D.C. Put me on the radio. Let me talk. I got something to say.
Yeah, it's always good to hear that young Nats fans know what they're talking about. And I love seeing them at the ballpark with their parents going out because you're creating a generation of fans that are going to make sure that baseball stays in D.C. for good this time, which is necessary. We're looking at that second half turnaround for the Nationals after May 24th, this date 1 year ago. And I'll tell you the stretch that was the most fun for me in the kind of back stretch and back nine of the season, and you'll remember this, was their offense caught complete fire in August. They won a couple straight games with seven runs, one in Citi Field against the Mets, and then another against the Reds, I think it was, at home when Eric Fetty pitched against DeSclafani. So they go back-to-back with seven-run outputs. They get a Joe Ross game, and they win that one. But then they went on this tear, and it was right around the time of an NL Central swing against the Reds, Brewers, and Pirates, where they scored 17, 14, 16, 13, 11, 9, 7, 7, 8, 7, 7 runs, 9 runs, 11 runs again. I mean, they were, in that stretch, hotter than any Nats offense and lineup has ever been before. They were scoring twice as many runs over like a 20-game span as any team in Major League Baseball. In fact, they won most of those games, obviously, but they lost one 15-14 to the Brewers. I was at that game. I stayed for all 14 innings. It was a disaster. It was the Sean Doolittle meltdown where he ended up on the injured list after giving up home runs on what felt like 10 straight swings late in that game. But that run where they were scoring, it seemed like 12 runs a game for basically three straight weeks. That's when I started to think something special's happening here. Like, this lineup is good enough with this starting pitching. This could work this year. It really wasn't until then in August. But, man, was that fun. I've never seen anything quite like that. And here it was the year after they lose Harper. Their offense is supposed to take a back seat to those in the past. Some of it had to do with the baseball and the home runs and the ball flying out of the park. But there was a three-game span where they scored 43 runs, 14, 16, and 13. And if you go back 2 days before that, they'd scored 17 runs. I'd never seen anything quite like it. It was amazing.
And I was with them in Pittsburgh and then to Wrigley Field where, you know, it was 7-9, 7-7, including the 11-inning game on getaway day there that took 4 hours and 35 minutes. God bless you that you stayed for all 5 hours and 40 minutes of that 15-14 Milwaukee game. But you're right. I mean, what happened in August from roughly right around August, even in a game where they lost 7-6 to the Mets on August the 9th, but from like August the 9th, through the end of August, I mean, it was crazy. Outside of the one outlier where they got shut out by the Orioles 2-0, I mean, it was seemingly this team was scoring like 7 runs a night. I mean, 8, 7, 7 right after that. So, again, when this offense got all of its parts going and got itself healthy, the hitting was just off the charts. I mean, the run production, and you mentioned it, there was a time where it just didn't seem like Juan Soto or Anthony Rendon made an out. Every at-bat was a quality at-bat, even when they did get out. Hard-hit balls, you know, there were still great contact, even though they may have gotten out on the play. And when the heart of your lineup, granted, and you know this from covering the game for a long time, when the heart of your lineup is going well, it makes everybody else around them better because those guys start seeing I'm not going to say more telegraphed pitches, but you can anticipate you're going to get a lot more fastballs because those guys are pitching in much different situations. Those guys are pitching in much more high leverage situations, which means a fastball mistake comes your way. You drill it. That continues to add to the offensive output for the ball club, especially when the middle of that lineup is going so well as it was at that time.
Yesterday, there was a replay of one of the great moments of any of our DC sports stars over the last 10 years. But it happened when they weren't with the team yet. So we'll talk about that. And also want to get into Noah Syndergaard getting sued by his landlord. And he says he's not the bad guy. We'll decide that. Next, with Pete, I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.